Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you in the air by listener-supported community radio station WFT, broadcasting from downtown Champaign, Illinois at 90.1 FM and webcasting live worldwide at WFT.org. Views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Gus Wood with some underwriting announcements.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at Channing Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon, Urbana. For more information, visit www.centraliljwj.org. That's centraliljwj.org. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build stronger communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support the community radio in East Central Illinois. The Graduate Employee Organization, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio.
Okay, thank you, Gus. And we got some very special guests in the studio today, Rich Whitney, another member of the Green Party, Vito. Rich is from Carbondale and Vito's from Mount Vernon. And then we'll be talking to them here real shortly. Just some real quick news headlines. There was a recent article in a labor newspaper, the Fox Valley Labor News. Outgoing Postmaster General Patrick Donahue made headlines when he blamed postal unions and big mailers for the big postal service problems in a recent farewell address. January 6th speech at the National Press Club, Donahue admitted that union Stop Staples campaign has disrupted the Postal Service's deal with the office supply chain. It also has made it more difficult for the United States Postal Service to get other businesses to participate in management scheme to privatize postal retail operations, he said. So definitely a big victory there on the Staples campaign. Recent elections in Greece last Sunday resulted in a new left-of-center coalition government, the Syriza party, which is Greece's been in very economic dire straits the last 4 years or so, with austerity imposed by the International Monetary Fund and the European Union, it was pretty bad. I mean, there were people eating out of garbage cans. Everyone lost health care because they had a national health care system. People lost jobs. Pensioners had their pension checks reduced and the minimum wage was reduced. And within days after taking government, the Syriza coalition restored the minimum wage, immediately reinstated the national health care service, stopped all privatization, turned on people's electricity. They didn't have electricity and started setting up food banks. So they're off to a great start, and one of the things they want to do besides trying to negotiate better terms for their debt, which, by the way, was taken out by banks, Greek banks and Greek wealthy Greeks. The Greek people had nothing to do with this as far as earning the, you know, getting the benefits of that money, but they sure have been paying the price for it. So what's going to happen here is, besides the negotiations with the European Union, is that they're going to go basically they're going to break up Greece's media and banking monopoly. And actually start going after wealthy people to make them pay their fair share of taxes. So, man, could we ever use something like that here. So, Gus, did you have anything you wanted to mention to listeners before we get into our introduce our guests here?
Yeah, definitely. In local news, I believe it was Thursday where the workers of Central Illinois were able to come together and give the newly elected governor, Bruce Reiner, a warm welcome to let him know that we will refuse to allow him to take advantage of the working class people. It was a beautiful sight to see all the different unions and all the different working groups come together. You had ASME, you had Teamsters, you had GEO, you had SEIU, you had Plumbers and Pipe Fitters. You had so many different groups coming together in solidarity to go up against a very volatile Republican governor who has stated that he wants to break apart unions and breaking apart the things that give working class people livable wages and livable job situations. So just wanted to give a big shout out to all the different groups that came out and all the different people who couldn't make it but are in support of working class and unions in Central Illinois. We have to continue to do this. We have to continue to show the governor that we will not stop fighting.
Indeed. Yeah, I was able to get to that rally too. And man, I mean, it's basically what, 24 hours notice? I
24
mean,
to, hours, yeah.
And there was over 200 people there, you know? Yeah. And boy, it was interesting. He pulls up in his black SUV and his little entourage and all of a sudden we started all yelling and stuff. In fact, my voice has just recovered. Chance of round or go home and union busting is disgusting. Boy, that vehicle sure sped up into the security area real fast. One of the building trades guys, I was getting them all pumped up, but says, hey, Ron, or come over here. We want to talk to you. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun, you know. Yeah. So, but anyway, yes, so at this point, we're going to introduce our guests. Guests, can you please introduce yourselves?
Sure. Rich Whitney, currently serving as chair of the Illinois Green Party.
And Vito Mastrangelo, currently the secretary for the Illinois Green Party.
Okay, well, thank you so much for riding Amtrak up here today, all the way from Mount Vernon and Carbondale, to be on the show. And just let you know, all the listeners know right off the top that besides doing this interview on the World Labor Hour, that Rich is going to be speaking at the Champaign Public Library today at 2 o'clock. So, but anyway, so I guess let's just start out. Could you just give a quick synopsis of sort of the history of the Green Party in the last 15 years, and then we'll start talking about the future here.
Yeah, well, actually 15 years is right on the money because, or actually we're just about 16 years old.
Okay.
The Illinois Green Party was founded in 1999. We had a local that was formed in Carbondale, before that in 1996, and there was a green, local in the city of Chicago going back to the roughly early to mid 1980s. But it was basically 15, 20 people in a room in Chicago. We founded the party. 2000 was the Nader campaign that brought a lot of new people into the party.
Mm-hmm.
When Nader ran as a Green that first time. And since then we've been, building up our strength. We've had, I think, a number of notable accomplishments. When you think about the enormity of the struggle of trying to crack that two-party duopoly that we have in this country.
Yeah, both corporate finance, by the way.
And, right, yeah. And we're only sweet 16.
Yeah.
going into it. We've actually done pretty well. We started out, you know, we're an activist-based party. In other words, our members typically come out of other kinds of single-issue activist struggles, struggle for single-payer health care. In my own case, it came out of a struggle to stop a really foolish plan in the Crab Orchard National Wildlife Refuge, where they wanted to use an incinerator to burn dioxin.
Wow.
Dioxin contaminated soil, which, you know, creates other problems.
Indeed.
And people come from all kinds of struggles, but over the years we then started performing the core functions of a party. We started running candidates and, when you think about how hard it is for a third party, we've done remarkably well. We currently have about 8 or 10 people that are elected to office at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
City Council in Galesburg, Illinois, City Council in my hometown of Carbondale, Illinois, electing people to park boards, library boards, that sort of thing, community college boards. And in our runs for a higher office, we haven't gotten people elected, but we've done remarkably well. We've had people win almost 40% of the vote in races for state representative and others in the 20% and so on. I ran for governor as our first gubernatorial candidate in 2006, got 10.4% of the vote when certain Rod Blagojevich was our governor.
That's right.
Judy Bar Topinka, bless her heart, and ran again in 2010. Didn't do as well in 2010 because there were 5 people running, including Scott Lee Cohen, who spent millions of dollars of his own money
mm-hmm.
as a independent, quote-unquote, candidate, even though that's dubious.
Mm-hmm.
But we keep on keeping on. We've had, in the last election, we had 2 excellent candidates for Congress, Nancy Wade up in the 5th Congressional District and our own Paula Bradshaw in the 12th, both of whom got between 5.5% and 6% of the vote, which for a congressional candidate is pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
So we keep on keeping on. We've got a lot of people running in different parts of the state for local offices, even though they're technically nonpartisan. People self-identify as green.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got some exciting things happening all around the state there. So,
okay. That's great.
The struggle continues.
I remember that election with Blagojevich and Judy Bartopinka. In fact, right before the election, Judy Bartopinka announced this great revelation about Rich Whitney. I mean, it was really amazing because they were ignoring you the best they could for the longest time. And then they couldn't ignore you anymore. So she had to come out with this,
old-fashioned red baiting.
Expose. If you want to mention that a little bit?
Years ago.
I love the way you handled it, by the way. It was great.
Oh, well, thank you. Years ago, I belonged to an organization called the Socialist Labor Party,
mm-hmm.
which was the original party of socialism in the United States. It actually goes back into the 19th century. Before the show, I heard you guys talking about the Knights of Labor.
Yes.
And Daniel DeLeon was actually one of the founding members of the IWW.
Mm-hmm.
So definite roots in American radicalism there, mm-hmm. Which I like to think of as really the American mainstream ideals.
Right.
But in any event, I was a socialist for many years before realizing that my political evolution took a different turn. And for a number of reasons, I ended up getting more involved in green politics. But, you know, I don't have any problem with the S word,
mm-hmm.
socialism. I still consider many of the ideas that are in the Green Party are very compatible with socialist ideas in the sense of we're fighting for working people.
Mm-hmm.
It's about building a society in which workers have real democratic control over our economic future, as well as our social future, as well as our political future. And the way I think about it is the best of the socialist traditions, as well as the traditions from other disciplines, have come together in the Green Party.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's the best exponent, but of these ideas today can be found in the Green Party of the United States and in Illinois.
Yeah, I loved it the way, you know, she had this big expose and you said, yeah, I mean, I wasn't just a member. I was also the editor of their national newspaper, you know.
Which I was.
And I think he went up in the polls after that. So.
I think so. Yeah. I had basically the late 80s, early 90s. I was the editor of the oldest socialist publication in the United States at the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, so now I'll tell you what, we're going to take a real quick music break here, and we're going to be back and talk a little bit here about the future of the Green Party. You're listening to World Labor Hour on List Supported Community Radio Station, WFT, in Champaign, Illinois. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Okay, that was Patty Smith, People Want the Power, and I got some quick public service announcements here. There will be a free screening of Middle of Nowhere that the Education Justice Project is hosting with the Art Theater on February 15th at 7:30 p.m. In conjunction with the free screening, there will also be a post-show panel moderated by Austin McCann. And this from the same director that did Selma, Ava DuVernay. Anyway, it's follows the film Middle of Nowhere follows Ruby, a bright medical student who sets aside her dreams and suspends her career when her husband is incarcerated. As a committed couple stares into the hollow end of an 8-year prison sentence, Ruby must learn to live another life, one marked by shame and separation, but through a chance encounter and a stunning betrayal that shakes her to the core, the steadfast wife is soon propelled into new and often shocking directions of self-discovery, caught between two worlds and two men in the search for herself. So you can check that out February 15th, 7:30 p.m. at the Art Theater. Also, this is from the National Committee for Protect Social Security and Medicare. The silence is deafening from President Obama. With so many threats to your earned benefits on the table in Washington, we need more elected officials to speak out in defense of the retirement security of millions of retirees, workers with disabilities, and their families. That's why I urge you to send a message to President Obama to stand up for Social Security and Medicare. The National Committee represents your interests and the interests of millions of American seniors across the country. Now more than ever, we need to raise our own voices in Washington as harmful proposals continue to emerge in Congress that could slash your Social Security and Medicare. And also, there's going to be an interesting little seminar called Know Your Rights as an Activist and Protester, and that will be on Wednesday, February 11th at 5:30 at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Urbana at 309 West Green Street. And it's a discussion of protest rights led by the Illinois ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union, hosted by the Unitarian Church. And you'll learn knowledge like what to do if you're arrested, common grounds for arresting protesters, recording police, blocking traffic, targeted sidewalks, demonstrations, and exceptions to the freedom of speech. So check that out on Wednesday, February 11th. And also today at 2 o'clock, tune in to None Other Sports Show, hosted by fellow worker Neil Parthen, which is, it's definitely, like the name says, None Other Sports Show. It's about the social and political and economics of professional sports. And also on this Sunday and every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m., tune in for Labor's Worldview TV, Comcast Channel 6. So, okay, we're back here with our guests, Rich Ritney. And okay, Rich, so we talked a little bit about what's, you know, the Green Party has done in the past. Maybe we should start out what's going on right now, you know, with the election of Bruce Rauner. I mean, it's amazing across the country. I mean, these election results, I mean, you know, it's not like the United States has turned to the right all of a sudden. It's just that it seems like the Democratic Party has just lost so much credibility with a lot of the voters that, I mean, let's face it, nationwide, almost two-thirds of the electorate stayed home, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was part of the phenomena with Rauner, in the sense that a lot of people are very angry with Pat Quinn, the past Democratic governor, for his attempts at pension theft and a few other things, too, that, you know, a lot of people just refuse to vote for Quinn, none of the above, you know. So let's start with there. And also maybe talk a little bit about what you do differently than what Rauner is proposing to do, and what you in general just think of what the solutions to the problems in the state of Illinois.
Certainly. Well, one of the things that really bothers me is the way that the whole issue of the state budget is being framed. You know, well, we had the income tax increase go up to 5%, and now that's going away. We can't continue that. So we're just looking at austerity, and the only real question then is how we're going to cut our spending so that government is quote unquote living within its means. And I don't buy that. It's a false premise that we're operating under, because this is still a very wealthy state, and we've already had, since roughly 2000, horrible cuts to social services in the state of Illinois. To both grade school education and higher education. If you look at it in real terms, it's something on the order of approaching 25% cuts, you know, after adjusting for inflation and population. To the point where government in Illinois is struggling to even perform its core functions. In many cases, not even doing that. And we all know, I think, what happens with college tuitions and the cost of higher education. None of this is necessary. That's our message. There are common sense things we could be doing in our state to solve the problem and restoring health to the public sector, and at the same time improving our employment situation for the same reason. One of them, of course, is the idea of the graduated income tax. Senator Harmon along with organized labor, fought for that last year, fell a little short, unfortunately. Part of the problem with that, of course, is it would require a constitutional amendment, which is an additional hurdle. It's ridiculous. You know, 38 states have a graduated income tax. We don't hear. It's common sense. You know, let's tax wealth instead of poverty. You know, how about that for an idea to start with? But we don't have that. Well, another thing that we could do is the idea of a speculation sales tax, which some folks in Chicago are referring to as the LaSalle Street tax. We have in Illinois the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the Board of Options Exchange, other houses of ill repute where speculative trading takes place. And this is something that's engaged in by the 1%, basically, and even a smaller percentage of that, where they're trading in futures, options, credit default swaps, derivatives, these exotic trading instruments that most ordinary people have no idea even what they are, and actually some of the people who trade them can't even describe what they are. But basically, it's gambling. It's organized gambling, where the extremely wealthy are trading on speculative instruments in the trillions of dollars. As a matter of fact, before the crash, they were up to the quadrillions of dollars in the amount. So when working people in this state, when we buy things that we actually need, we pay sales taxes, right? 6-7% depending on where you live.
Yeah, I think it's about almost, I think it's about 9% here almost.
Yeah, it depends on the area, but it's at least 6% anywhere in the state. And it could be higher than that. So we're buying necessities. We pay sales taxes. When these people are trading speculative instruments, they pay not a dime of sales tax. And if we had a minuscule tax on the trading of these instruments at these houses in Illinois, and I'm talking about 1/100 of 1% on each trade, we could raise billions of dollars, maybe tens of billions of dollars, to solve the pension crisis, to restore health to our schools, public services, higher education. Clearly, none of this is necessary. And this is the thing that's not being talked about by our so-called leaders in Springfield. But it needs to be talked about.
Yes. hi, folks. It's Bill Grell. Illinois is perennially, like, in the worst five states for regressive taxation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Always. And beyond that, you can easily justify they're making all these trillions of dollars on the in the infrastructure that we help provide them.
Absolutely. With. As a matter of fact, the exchanges got a tax break a little over a year ago. You know, so that because they threatened to move their physical structure, which I think was a phony threat.
Sure.
But in any event, they threatened it, and the General Assembly immediately caved and gave them a tax break. So yeah, no excuses. You know, and the thing about the speculation sales tax is the exchanges wouldn't pay the tax any more than when we pay a sales tax. We're paying it. The merchants aren't paying it, right? This would be like a pinprick to an elephant, a tax of 1/100 of 1%. And it would do so much for our state to pass this. I will say I haven't seen if she's introduced it this year, but State Rep Mary Flowers, the exception to the rulers, for the most part, one of the few. There's a handful of good people in Springfield. To her credit, she has introduced a bill for a speculation sales tax at least the last couple of years. Unfortunately, John Bradley, the others in the Finance Committee, I've gone there and spoke. I actually went and testified before the Special Joint Committee on Solving the Pension Crisis, you know, before they passed that horrible bill. Myself, Bill Barkley, who's with the Chicago Political Economy Group, who did a lot of the math on this, he spoke and testified. There's no excuses. They know about this. They know of the real solutions, but they won't enact them, because they're too much beholden to the power of big money. And that gets us to the larger problem and why it's so important to have a Green Party.
Okay.
Yeah,
in this state.
So I think that's a very important point, that what you just said, is that they know of the problem, but of course they're not going to enact it. And I think it's important that we do recognize parties like the Green Party who actually want to, like you said earlier, break apart this monopoly of political economy, because there's this sense that that there are people in these particular Democrat and Republican parties who actually are going to enact change, but they exist in a very corrupt system that allows them to facilitate capitalism, racism, and other types of inequalities, where you have activists running in the Green Party who really want to actually, who come from a grassroots level and want to change the political system instead of politicians from the top down coming into the Democrat Republican Party and just facilitating oppression. So I think that's a really powerful thing that we recognize, that we have a grassroots led group like the Green Party who actually are not politicians from the top down, but they're grassroots activists from the ground up who want to do something.
Exactly. And that kind of segues a little bit in one of the things I'm going to be talking about this afternoon at the Champaign Public Library, is that there's no shortage of solutions, right? Organized labor, the groups that have been fighting for restoring funding to our schools, the peace movement, the environmental movement. You go down the list of problems we face today, we know what the solutions are. Mm-hmm. In fact, when you discuss these problems, half of the solutions are stop. You know, stop doing what you stop going to war, stop fracking, stop doing this, stop doing that, right? So the solutions are real simple in that case. But the problem is that too much, the movement groups are so focused on protesting what government does or what it fails to do that they don't think about, what about getting into government? That's what we need to be doing, you know, instead of protesting from the outside. How about the environmental movement, labor, the groups that want better funding for our schools, the students that are protesting against higher tuition, the peace movement, all coming together in their own political expression. And let's take our agenda to the inside of government instead of protesting from the outside, where guess what? We haven't been all that effective.
Yes. I mean, I personally think you need to do both, but go ahead, Bill.
Code Pink got John McCain to call him scum.
Well, there's that, yeah. Okay. We take our victories where we find them.
Yes. But I know Illinois is one of the worst states. I mean, as far as two obstacles so far that I've seen with the Green Party, and one of them is the requirements to get on the ballot. I mean, there is a concerted effort to keep Greens off the ballot in Illinois in particular. I think Illinois is one of the worst states, isn't it?
It is. It's not so much, well, to give an example, to get on the ballot for governor, unfortunately we failed this last time, but we're going to come back in 2016. But to get on the ballot for governor, any statewide office, it's 25,000 valid signatures from registered voters.
Which means you need to get at least probably 35 or 40.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But the real killer is they only give you 90 days to do it. Which is
90 days.
To do it, which is, that's the real killer, and actually we're challenging that in a couple of lawsuits right now. Once again, we're fighting them in the courts, but that's one of the shortest windows that exists. When you look at the combined effect of the number plus the short window, it is one of the worst states.
Here's something strange. I can't remember which year this was, but I went to vote in the primary, mm-hmm. and this was in Bemidji, Illinois, Pike County. And I went in and I asked for the green ballot.
Right.
And they gave me a Democrat one because they had them printed on green paper.
Yes, yes.
That's purposeful, you know.
Yes. We heard many of those stories.
There was another famous instance about when you, I think, I can't remember which year it was you ran, but there was some strange thing that happened when you're in the Chicago area when your name was put on the ballot. You want to talk about that a little bit? I mean, these dirty tricks are all over the place. That's why I'm trying to bring this out.
Yeah, in 2010, actually during early voting, we learned that in the city of Chicago, on the electronic voting machines, they had my name misprinted on the ballot as Rich Whitey, as opposed to Whitney. They left out the N.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, this, of course, was a source of a lot of humor. I actually probably got a little of attention from it.
Uh-huh.
But obviously, for the serious part of people voting, seeing Rich Whitey, who you know, I'm not going to vote for this person. You know, we have enough Rich Whiteys as it is.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's Bruce Rauner.
Yeah. Well, but the other serious part of this is it relates to another, I think, very serious problem. That's the whole problem of black box voting, mm-hmm. where we have these electronic voting machines that the public sector, it's a case of privatization, it's turned over to these private corporations. Mm-hmm. The electronic voting machines in the city of Chicago in 2010, and I don't know if it's changed, but it's probably the same outfit, is a corporation called Dominion Software. They're a Canadian-based corporation, and isn't that a scary name, Dominion?
Yes, appropriate name.
Yeah, appropriate name. And it's proprietary software. So when it comes to accounting for the vote, we're relying on these private corporations and them to count these electronic ballots. Very serious issue, you know, and it's been pointed out to me. Do we really know that Bruce Browner won the last election? I mean, I have no confidence in that. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a lot of parts of the state, they still use paper and all that. And I'm not saying he didn't get a large vote, but you know, this is the question of ballot integrity is a serious one that demands more attention than what it's got.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. And ballot integrity is a historical issue when it comes to these. I mean, you know, even
and
before
in Chicago,
exactly. Even before technology, you know, you had like instances where they would have somebody who voted like 80 times, just changing the way they looked, or they would have people who were dead that they were counting on ballots and things like that, changing IDs. So I agree with you. Yeah, that's something that is really mind boggling, the privatization of ballot boxing. I mean,
well, I've had in my will that I want to be, when I die, I want to be buried in Chicago so I can remain politically active.
Okay. Okay. All right. So, you know, also a lot of things have been happening recently. I mean, like with what's been going on with it seems like a huge epidemic of police killings of unarmed African-American youth and other people. I mean, it includes there's also been Native Americans and poor whites killed by the police too. I mean, so don't think this only affects black people. If any of you listening out there thinking it's only an issue that should be concerned of African-Americans, but it seems like the police have just become so militarized over the years, and it seems like now that it's something Nothing's changed here. I mean, it's just like you just didn't hear about this these many police killings before, you know. And I think it's beyond just people being more aware of it. It seems like the actual numbers have increased statistically. I mean, there's facts to back this up. What is your opinion about everything that's been happening? I mean, you know, with Ferguson, of course, has been the big flashpoint. Can you talk a little about this and maybe in general police militarization and what's been going on?
Sure. Actually, one of the other hats I wear is I was a civil rights attorney for many years. I'm currently working as an appellate defender. But I actually represented people in suits involving excessive use of force by police. And you're absolutely right. It certainly crosses racial lines. Obviously, when you get into urban areas, there's a disproportionate number of black males in particular that are victimized because of what the media does, demonizing
yes.
young black males. Mm-hmm. And that, I'm sure, is a huge factor. But part of it is, I think, you know, is the whole social and class role of the police, mm-hmm. both historically and as it's come through to the present day. Police, I think, to a certain degree, are recruited for the purpose of, you know, it's not part of their literal training, but there's a certain element of brutality, I think, that comes into the social expectation of the role of the police. Let's put it that way.
Well, I think it has a lot to do with training, and I think that is why every one of these cops always says that they were in fear for their life because somebody
right.
told, somebody's going, I mean, there's probably companies that are nationwide training these people. I'm not sure it'd be real interesting to look into.
Yeah. And the other aspect of it that you mentioned, you know, the militarization of the police. Now, this is something we can affect more readily on a policy level, the militarization. And you know, I think it's part of a broader national trend of creating the foundations of a national security state. You know,
I think just to jump in too, and I think that it's important that we recognize that the increase in police brutality has also matched or correlated with the rise in sub working class work and the problems of the economy as well. You know, the police force was created historically to protect and serve the rich and separate them from the poor people. So what I think is happening is because of there's this sense that because we are taking away livable wage jobs. Jobs from the working class and making them sub working class workers, that there's going to be an actual retaliation by the masses of working people to attain the wealth of the private people. So this is a way to kind of keep the working class people, especially predominantly African Americans, in check so that they don't try to go over that bridge. You know, this is a historical trend of police and also army, however you want to say it. But this is wholly related to the political economy of the United States.
Yeah. You know, we're going to have to take a quick music break here. And when we come back, I want to open up the phone lines for anybody that would like to call in and ask, comment or ask Rich Whitney a question. You listen to World Labor Hour on List Supported Community Radio Station, WT in Champaign. We'll be right back.
hypnotized of a government that has no clue. Inside fighting between the red and the blue. Political corruption, sex scandals out of control. The people are tired of cash. Wage and cash their votes and people want to change. Tired of the same.
Okay, you're back with Rural Labor Hours. John Lee Hooker, People Want to Change, and thought that'd be appropriate for this program because, you know, Rich, a lot of people out there I talk to, I mean, just everyday working people are just so sick and disgusted with everything. I mean, you know, I even see bumper stickers around town that don't reelect anybody. I mean, you know, that's quite a scattergun approach, if you will, and it's not a real effective strategy, but you can kind of understand the sentiment out there.
Oh, absolutely, and I ran into a lot. You know, I've been out of the streets when we try to get our candidates. We have to do this petitioning, so I have a lot of contact at fairs and carnivals and whatnot, just talking to people on the street. And unfortunately, it's part of a dilemma for us is that because of the power of big money dominating both the Democratic and Republican parties and big money dominating politics in general, we've come to a point now where money basically buys political results. And, of course, part of the effect of that is that voters become discouraged. They get fed up with the whole thing and say, oh, they're all a bunch of crooks, you know. And so we're trying to get people interested in the Green Party and say, hey, we don't take corporate money. We're different, you know. We're a grassroots organization. We're based on principles. We don't accept any corporate donations as a matter of principle. We're trying to do something different. It makes it very hard. The dilemma has become that the people with the most at stake with having good political outcomes, with having good government, with having a healthy public sector, are now the ones that are staying away from the polls in droves. And this is part of the challenge. Now, saying it's a dilemma doesn't mean we're giving up. Obviously not. We realize that this project is something that takes perseverance. But this is one of the problems we face, particularly with the every election cycle, there is more and more hundreds of millions of dollars spent on negative ads, basically turning people off to the entire thing, that it's a real problem. And I don't have any magic answers, but I know that this is part of the problem, is that people don't come to the Green Party like we hope they should, if you're looking at the issues, because they just fed up with the whole thing, and they want to distance themselves from it.
Oh, by the way, getting back to police training real quickly.
Sure.
If you type that into Google, the first thing that pops up is a picture of a building a couple of miles from here. Mm-hmm. The University of Illinois Police Training Institute.
Yes, that's
maybe
right.
That's where this is coming from.
Yeah, certainly. Well, and it's also recruitment too. You know, who are the people that are recruited? I know in Southern Illinois, where I'm from, you know, the people that they recruit for these kinds of jobs are, you know, maybe not the best, and the pay is lousy too for some of these people. You know, they're not exactly attracting.
Yeah. I just want to say real quick, listeners out there, the phone line is open. You can call in if you'd like at 359-5483. That's 359-5483. Gus?
Yeah, just to add in that, you know, you said that the pay is lousy because the majority of the people they are recruiting are ex-military figures are coming into these positions. So, you know, the issues that they have over in war, and they're bringing that here, and they have their military pensions plus on top of that to pay. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, and I don't mean to say, by the way, that, you know, all police are bad and all that, but if we're looking at the trends, you know, mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I've represented police officers who, as working people, have gotten screwed. I mean, I understand both sides of that equation. But yeah, if we're looking at the trends and what's happening out in the streets.
Wow, we got two people calling at the same time here.
Huh? Okay, well.
Okay, we'll take the first one, 5483. WFT, you're on the air.
Jim Iman.
Yes, Jim.
I got to turn the radio off. Okay. I appreciate it very much, your view on, well, on the role of the working class. I, too, come from the Socialist Labor Party, actually, Georgia Cozzini, Milwaukee. But what I think the real problem is today is the class consciousness of our people. We have to be a class in itself, for itself. We're not there. Afro-American workers and Latino workers are far more class conscious than the Anglo-Americans are. And I just want your thoughts on that. I'm looking forward to meeting you this afternoon. Bye.
Okay. Well, I missed the first part of that question, but you mentioned Georgia Cassini. I remember Georgia very well. And and I didn't catch the caller's name, but thank you for bringing that back up. But yeah, I absolutely agree with you. You know, working people being aware of their status as a class is very important, and to think in working class terms and thinking of labor, not just labor unions, but labor with a small L, having distinct interests as opposed to those of the people that. We're having technical problems, apparently.
Okay, we're going to, I guess, I was going to try to take the next caller. Sorry about that. I don't know what happened there, but we had something happen where we lost the caller. Caller, there was another caller trying to call in. If you want to call back, please call the 359-5483 number when you call, please. Thank you. Okay, so.
So basically, I agree with the caller that there needs to be an awareness that, you know, we still live in a society in which a small minority owns the means of producing wealth.
WFT, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to ask about fracking in southern Illinois. It's a frackaholic binge the United States is on, it seems to me. Keep it in the ground. By the way, tomorrow at 5, Bill McKibben and Ralph Nader on the radio at Window on the World. I forgot to get that announcement in earlier. I guess I'll hang up and check you out on the stream here.
Okay, thank you, caller. Okay, so there's a lot of fracking going on down in your part of Illinois, correct?
Well, it hasn't actually started, but that's the target is southern Illinois. Fortunately, we've had some delays and every day that the onset of fracking is delayed is a good day as far as I'm concerned, because this is just an absolutely horrible technology. You know, the idea of fracking is inherently unsafe, to put it bluntly. But, even if it's better regulated and so on, it's particularly ludicrous to do it in southern Illinois, where we live in two extremely volatile seismic zones, one of which caused one of the biggest earthquakes in American history, if not global history. And the shale level in southern Illinois happens to be among the most radioactive. So, gee, what a great idea. Let's drill deep into the earth, pump a bunch of toxic chemicals under high pressure into a seismic zone where it's radioactive. Let's get some radioactive flowback water. Then we'll dump that waste into deep injection wells and see what happens if there's an earthquake. What a wonderful idea. What could possibly go wrong? I mean, the thing is, it's absolutely insane. And the other thing that isn't talked about a lot is there's another overarching reason why this technology is bad is, guess what? We cannot continue to extract and burn fossil fuels like we have been doing. The idea that this is driving down the price of oil and natural gas is not a good thing. It's a bad thing, okay? Because scientists have already basically determined that if we combust about 20% of the known reserves, we're done for. We're past that tipping point. We can't keep doing this. So that's the additional overarching reason why this is a bad thing that we need to be fighting with all our heart. And I've been involved in SAFE, the group in southern Illinois that's been fighting this. So is Vito. Mm-hmm. We've been very active in this struggle. We're going to continue to be active in this struggle. Thank goodness that the temporary low price of gas has kind of stalled it out a little bit, but we're not safe until there is a ban on fracking in the state of Illinois and, frankly, in the country.
Okay.
Yeah, and that wasn't something that we were getting from the Democrats either.
No,
they just passed a new regulatory bill.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's the strongest regulations in the country. Well, no, they're not, because New York just enacted a ban. That's the strongest regulation in the country.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
exactly.
So this goes back to the budget thing, because what I think many of the Democratic representatives were hearing was, possibly more jobs, but maybe more revenue for the state, you know, without us having to do something sensible like taxing speculation in the state. They smelled the money a little bit, and of course a lot of them got campaign contributions. This is a case where you talk about buying political results. You can go online and see John Bradley, Brandon Phelps, all of our so-called representatives in southern Illinois got oil and gas money. It's no secret why this happened.
Yes, indeed.
Well, I mean, who knows who might own farmland that's being leased, too.
Well, there's that, too. And that's the little bit of, you know, the chump change that's being offered to landowners is part of the equation as well.
Yeah. What up, tell you, there's been a lot of course, concern, I mean, with working people around the country. I mean, it seems like every, you know, they're stagnating or even falling in real term wages. There's a lack of, you know, in general, decent paying jobs. There's threats, on Social Security, and, pensions, both, you know, public and now, even private pensions, so to speak. Bill and I in the construction trades, we were part of a Taft-Hartley, pension program that was regulated by ERISA, federal government regulatory agency. Well, now that's open game now, you know, on retirement. And the other, sort of the tripod of this is healthcare. What is your opinion about, well, the Affordable Care Act and single-payer national healthcare?
Well, the Affordable Care Act, despite the few positive features that people keep pointing to, basically was a giveaway to the health insurance companies. It's basically requiring the American people under penalty of a financial penalty.
A fine, yes, yeah.
To buy a defective product, private, for-profit health insurance. And there needs, and actually, I think this is a case where the American people are more ahead of their so-called leaders, because even during the height of all the propaganda saying, no, we don't want a public option. We don't, you know, we want to keep, you know, private insurance in the game. You still had polls showing roughly 2/3 of the American people saying, no, we want a publicly funded healthcare. We want improved Medicare for all. And that to me still needs to be the rallying cry. That's the only way we're really going to have affordable healthcare, accessible healthcare for all the people, is when the public collectively pays for it and everybody's in the pool, right? Instead of this patchwork system we have now. Thank goodness that at least there's efforts in Vermont to maybe move ahead. I know that's a battleground still. But I'm still hoping we do that here, as well as in Vermont, that we do that in Illinois. Once again, State Representative Mary Flowers, a little shout out to her, the sparkling exception to most of the crowd in Springfield that still doesn't get it, what we really need to do to move forward.
And there's other legislatures, that are, you know, like Mary Flowers out there.
There are a few, yes.
Yeah. And, we just elected one here, Carol Ammons, who's, basically signed on to the, Illinois, single payer bill just recently.
And good for her.
And we've got about another dozen or so in the state. I mean, of course we need more, but I mean,
we need a lot more.
This is a big battle, because we're, you know, in order to get a single payer Medicare for all system in a state or nationally, you're fighting some extremely powerful and wealthy corporate special interests.
And that's why it didn't happen nationally. I mean, I'm sure you and some of our listeners are aware what happened when some of the people went to Congress and they tried to testify before the committee. They got shut out. They got arrested. It was horrible. The fix was in early on in the discussion when, what was the Kansas senator that was leading? I can't remember.
Oh, you're talking about Senator Max Baucus from Montana.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he got, you know, tens and hundreds
a Democrat,
of thousands,
by the way.
Yeah, hundreds of thousands of dollars from the health insurance industry. Once again, it's money buying political results.
There's something I want to ask you. something came up on a email list recently, and it was some union activists, and they were talking about the Green Party.
Mm-hmm.
And the Labor Party, just third party, what people should do. And one activist, I believe, was in a part of the country and where somebody had run as a Green Party candidate for something. And he's claimed that that person was talking about they ought to shut down SUV factories and or something. I mean, do you ever hear anything like that from union or labor activists, or
well, not that,
because
that,
the Green Party does have such an environmental
sure.
reputation, you see,
right? But see, there again, you're talking about a false dichotomy that's been created. The fact of the matter is that sound environmental policy, especially in the area we're talking about fighting climate change,
right,
has much more job creating potential than continuing to do what we've been doing now. And so the interests of labor and the interests of the environmental movement really are compatible. And I think most of the labor movement is really understanding this. I think that there's still sectors where the old dichotomy of, oh, you know, it's the spotted owls versus jobs kind of thing is still with us, unfortunately.
Right. Or natural gas versus, you know, what, another thing too is, what was it? I had a thought there. What I'm thinking is what we need is basically a World War II level effort. You know, when it comes to changing for the environment, because that's how bad it is. And this is worse than Hitler. This is like the existence of life on the planet.
Well, exactly. We do need a mobilization. As a matter of fact, we call it the Green New Deal. And I'm showing you the pamphlet of our candidate, Paula Bradshaw, on the 12th. I just wanted to read you a little bit because just what we're talking about. There was a study that was done by the Political Economy Research Institute and the Center for American Progress. Talking about the economic benefits of investing more in renewable energy. And one of the things they found that if you invest $1 million in oil and natural gas extraction, it creates 5.2 jobs. If you invest $1 million in coal, it creates 6.9 jobs. But if you take that same $1 million and invest it in building retrofits, it creates 16.7 jobs. In mass transit or freight rail, it creates 22.3 jobs. In smart grid, 12.5 jobs. In wind power, 13.3 jobs. In solar energy, 13.7 jobs. The same money, the same monetary resources put into the things that we need to address the problem of climate change has much more job-creating potential than going back and trying to extract more of that fossil fuels out of the ground that we can't burn anyway if we want to live.
Yeah, indeed. Gus, we're about out of time here, so I want to make sure you got another question, and I'm going to ask a final question of Rich, basically what he would do if he was actually elected governor here instead of Bruce Brown, or what would be his first act in office. Kind of a fantasy scenario. But, anyway, go ahead.
I'd still be on this radio show.
Okay.
That's a utopian idea right there. Man. I don't know if we can even think about that, but But yeah, just in general, in terms of the Green Party, where do you see the Green Party going forward nationally? What position are they in right now in terms of what's going on with the 2016 elections? Some of the statewide elections that are also coming up later. So what do you see the future of the Green Party in terms of how we're moving towards now with this kind of, a neoconservative push federally and statewide?
Well, we're doing everything we can. As far as 2016, we did have a very excellent presidential candidate, Dr. Jill Stein, in 2012. She, to her credit, she has remained tremendously active in movement work since then. We see her in Seattle. We see her in Chicago for the climate convergence that was held there recently.
She was in Ferguson, too, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. A tremendous activist and talk about setting a good example. Realistically, you know, we're not talking about electing a president in 2016. We're not crazy. We understand that. Mm-hmm. But the value of things like a high profile race, like a presidential campaign, a gubernatorial campaign, and so on, is it raises the profile of the party. It makes people more aware. It helps some of the smaller campaigns, the lower level office campaigns, where we can get people elected, where we have gotten people elected. So that's really the value. Rome wasn't built in a day. If you think about, you know, a lot of people say, well, gee, I like the Green Party, but it doesn't seem to be getting anywhere. Well, hello. We're 16 years old. The last time a so-called third party, became a major party was with Abraham Lincoln and the Republican Party in the 1850s and early 60s. You know, there's no roadmap for us. We're doing the best we can. But for people to say, well, you know, I'd like to vote green, but I don't want to waste my vote, or I'd like to vote green, but they're too small. Well, hello, how do you make it bigger? If you don't get involved, it doesn't get bigger. If you know, there's no magic answers here. We need people who've come to the conclusion that, guess what, big money is dominating the Democratic Party just as it dominates the Republican Party, despite some notable exceptions, which you pointed out. Here and there, there are good Democrats and occasionally good Republican. But by and large, the institutions are so much in the thrall of big money, mm-hmm. that there has to be a, we need an enlightenment in this country. We need something like an enlightenment to realize we can't keep doing this anymore. The solution has to be to build a true progressive third party that is going to express the interests of labor, of the environmental movement, of the peace movement that have been thwarted for so long. And to me, clearly, instead of starting from scratch, we already have a group that's been fighting hard to do exactly that, and that group is the Green Party.
Okay. Yes, and, you know, there's a lot of races around the country, where you've got the, supposed choice, between a Republican and a corporate Democrat. And I think that's what a lot of people are disgusted with, you know.
Sure, absolutely.
You know? And I know what you're saying, Rich. I mean, I have, had this conversation with a lot of working people, but I'm telling you, things aren't getting any better. They're getting worse out there. And you know what, what's the famous quote from Einstein, that if you repeat something over and over again and keep getting the same results and wonder why, that that's kind of a...
The definition of insanity.
Yes. So, you know, we gotta try something different here. So, I mean, you know, I think, now more than ever is when, you know, look at, and there's been some successes around the country there. Parties, because Kashama Sawant in city of Seattle ran as a socialist.
Absolutely.
And who would have thought a socialist would get elected to a city council of a major city like Seattle? And then in out in Ohio, it's near Cleveland, Lorain County. There was a whole bunch of, in fact, there was 23 union members who ran, against the local Democratic establishment for county board and city council, and 18 of them got elected. They ran on a Labor Party ticket. And, you know, so, It's doable. It's doable. And I think, it's just, you know, with things getting worse and not any better, I think, people are gonna start becoming more, responsive to this sort of thing because, frankly, let's look at this last election. Almost 2/3 of, eligible voters stayed home. So look at, I mean, that's a huge potential right there. Not to say I'm advocating that, but that's, look, this is where we're at. You know, this is the reality.
I think you would have got possibly 30% of the vote because people are so disgusted after Blago and Quinn and the situation the state's in. Yeah. I think there would have been that much. The people who voted for the minimum wage and the legalized pot, I'm sure that they would have voted for you. I think a lot of those people just didn't vote for governor.
Yeah, and we did have an excellent candidate in Scott Summers who was prepared to run. Unfortunately, we got challenged. We had to go through that. That's why we have a lawsuit, because of the restrictive ballot access laws. I think we're going to come back stronger in 2016. So I don't think it'll be me, but we will have a good candidate, I think, for governor in 2016, 2018. Sorry. Not adding correctly.
I'll point out that in the primary, only 18% of the voting public pulled ballots. So, you know, people out there who are alienated from the process, you're not alone. Check out the Green Party. Rich Whitney was instrumental in adopting that, writing a platform. And I think you'll find that it will resonate with you.
Okay, well, Rich Vito, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to World Labor Hour on the Supporting Community Radio Station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. Until next week, be safe and power to the people. Take care.